Sabrina George for a new comedy radio interviewing Scott Cabrera. So one of the, talking about confronting long-held treasures, I saw the documentary you made about gay and gay animal whatever you call it, gay behaviour amongst animals. And it was one of those precious moments that I think should be held in the historian's library of you actually getting our national treasure, David Attenborough, to look extremely uncomfortable, as you've pointed out, that you've been editing out a lot of film footage to exclude the gay factor in the animal kingdom.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with that?
Well, Diverse Films called me and said they had this important text that they wanted to turn into film because there was a text on the subject.
Okay.
And it sounded intriguing. And I said yes. And I had no feelings either way. I was raised around animal rehabilitation, and I knew that there was...
What's animal rehabilitation?
Well, my mother's second husband works for the Humane Society, and we would take in stray animals whose parents had been murdered or killed by traps and needed, you know, deer can't raise themselves, orphan raccoons or pigs. They're adorable, and, you know, they count on their families. So we would take them in and raise them. So I... You know, I said dogs and cats and birds, and it was always around animals. I volunteered there. And I'd seen loads of homosexual behavior between animals. But they wouldn't, these specialists wouldn't call it anything other than exuberance. Sexual exuberance. That was hilarious. And when we got these people off camera, like we talked to, I think it was either Oxford or Cambridge professor we spoke to, who on camera called it exuberance and off camera admitted that he had witnessed homosexual behavior between animals, but he wouldn't call it that. He would lose his, you know, he'd lose his standing in his society. And it was at that point that I became much more interested in the subject. Because it was clear to me that people were treating their animals as though they were their children. And people will take anything from their children except homosexuality. Drug addiction, sex, pregnancy, anything but that. Anything but that. So it just started to take on a kind of a darker, deeper meaning to me. I really enjoyed making that program. It's had a lot of impact. I've got emails from all over the world.
I was going to say, what has been the impact from it?
Well, I've got emails from the straight, quote-unquote, guy from Israel was emailing me saying, I used to hate homosexuals. I'd see them on the street and was offended. Then I saw your program, and I realized they're like everyone else. And I said, send me a photo of yourself. And he did, with his wife and child. And I said, and I just started flirting with him via email. And he did for a while and then stopped. And I've got emails from Russia. I don't know if they show it there or not, but people may have seen it online or something. And it still shows in America a lot on this one channel. They repeat it again and again. I think it's you know, people want to be they want to be turned on by something. That's not the word I'm looking for, but it's close enough. They find homosexuality, especially amongst animals, enough of a taboo that it feels naughty. And I think also, you know, there's something about the idea that your animals whom you're around all the time might have a secret life you know nothing about that I think makes that program interesting.
But also it's a long-held thing that homosexuality isn't natural, and to find that actually in the natural kingdom, a denial of mother's behaviour or, you know, father being absent or all these bizarre things which are put out there as to the reason why homosexuality exists, to find that in the animal kingdom you can't account for that.
Right. And that was why talking to that woman in, I think it was Montana or Wyoming, with the sheep. Was so interesting.
Yeah.
And it was government funded too, and she said the sheep are attracted by scent, and these male sheep, they know exactly what they're picking when they pick a male. 1 in 10 choose male.
And the story of the swan as well, the lonely swan that had lost its
male.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was all quite lovely, though, especially the way the people who found it natural amongst their animals, who raised animals, worked with them all the time. I thought the way that they dealt with it mostly was just kind of gorgeous. And the way that for them, it wasn't about tolerance or acceptance, it was just a preference, like a color, a favorite color or a favorite film, or it had been broken down to a body function, which is exactly what sexuality should be, what it is.
And it has, do you think it's had an impact on the academic side of things?
I don't know. I don't know that.
Zoologists ringing you up and saying no.
Cheers, guys.
But I don't think that. I don't think it can, because those people are obviously really, they're very precious about their ideas and what they think. They're not going to let some has-been who never was from San Francisco team tell them any differently. I think maybe, you know, what that program probably was for, I think in my mind, maybe not the producers, but in my own, was, you know, young people that are struggling. You know? I mean, I'm not so sure, like Harvey Firestein said years ago, that, you know, any publicity is good publicity for the gay community, that any visibility is good visibility. I don't know about that, but I know that visibility was good.
Well, it's coming from a completely left of field, how it's the visibility is normally put across,
yeah.
Which is lots of frocks doing parades. So it's very different from that perspective. Do you find that doing clubs, and I'll say America, not San Francisco, because that's separate, is that much different from doing a British audience, working with a British audience?
No, I don't think so. I think they're relatively the same. I think it's so much British television in America now, and vice versa, that I think people even know where England is, which is nice. It's a nice change. And they're as localized there as they are here. What I mean is, when I'm in San Francisco, they really don't want to hear that much about here. When I'm here, they don't want to hear much about California. When I was just in Ireland, people were yelling out, make fun of Ireland, make fun of Ireland. People want to hear you talk about their
locale.
Yeah.
But you don't actually change much of the sensibility of what
no,
you're talking about.
I mean, you know, again, I feel as though if you hire me, you get me. And I assume when they hire me, they want what I offer. And in San Francisco, you know, or New York where I play, and, or other places, I feel as though it's been pretty well received, relatively. I didn't have to change very much, so I didn't.
So you just wouldn't get booked for a redneck gig, do you think? Or
some log cabin Republicans have been trying to book me. Those are gay Republicans. And I've been chasing down that gig.
Is that what they're called? Log cabin Republicans.
And I would love to work with them. I think that would be fantastic. You know, everyone wants to perform in front of the Tories. None of the comics want to perform in front of Labour. They're so boring. They're a bunch of vegan, you know, lactose intolerant lesbians in Labour, but I can imagine how fun the Tory party would be. It'd be hilarious to do a comedy show. I mean, I don't know if you know, but George Bush just had a really well-known comic.
I saw a little snippet on it on the telly. What was that about?
I didn't really see the whole thing. He's really well-known.
He's an impersonator.
He's a stand-up comic, but he's been working with Jon Stewart for a long time, and now he has his own show. He's a political pundit, but a complete satirist. And he plays what looks to be sort of a Fox News TV kind of conservative news guy with his own show, but everything is turned and everything is twisted and everything has a politically correct innuendo and an agenda. It's very clever. And Steve Corbett. And so Bush's people booked him, I think, because I'm not sure if they got it. Maybe they thought he was actually a Fox News supporter, or maybe they knew he is Christian and he talks about that. He's a good Catholic. And maybe they thought, oh, he'll be nice. And he wasn't nice. He was very, very biting. That's a comic stream. Any comic stream audience would be to perform in front of George Bush's. Because I bet they have a great sense of humor about what they do. Same with you all about Republicans and about conservatives. But especially here, the Tory party doesn't take themselves so goddamn seriously. I've done a lot of TV shows with Tory politicians, and they're a hoot. I mean, from the accent down to the Argyle socks, they're hilarious. And they're willing to make fun of themselves.
Well, it's what I miss about the Thatcher years, or the Conservative years, is the great characters like Alan Clark and people coming up. We've got Boris Johnson, bless him, who's keeping us amused.
He is great, but, you know, even his own party turned their backs on him for a little while, which is unfortunate.
And they probably will turn us a little bit more as time goes
on. I like him a lot. But I met his father, and he's someone I'm trying to do a TV show with.
Oh, really?
So I found his father to be like Boris. Brainiac, but completely out of touch with reality. I mean, maybe because he's so intelligent. And very articulate, lovely and friendly, and very, very cuddly. And I want to do this program with him, a series with him in the first episode, about making over Britain, institution by institution. And I think that there's a lot of potential for what I do here. And I haven't found it yet. I think that's why I keep coming back. Because I think the most frustrating for me or for any comics to not have reached your potential. It's why I'm so envious of my friends who are on TV. And not because they're on TV, because they know what I know. And we talk about the TV's not that great a shape. But it's because they're getting more, garnering power, so that at some point they know. They'll be able to go to them and say, this is what I want to do.
And go for it. And you think that's more possible here than in the States?
For me it is, at this point. Maybe because I've been here more, but also because I think there's less of a wall between comics and TV people. I mean, it's less, you know, there's less fantasy involved. There's so much less money involved. So it's, there's not that hierarchy to crawl through, you know. And I think I'm the only one doing what I do here, which is in a way a hindrance, but it might help in the near future. So we'll see.
So who would you naturally, instinctively vote for, the left or the right?
Well, I'm unfortunately, I'm represented by the Respect Party in my neighborhood, which I wouldn't vote for. Not because I think he's a thug, although he is. I just think he's wrong. And
this is the fabulous George Galloway, for those who don't know.
Yeah. And I think that I would vote for... I mean, I'm an old left-wing hippie like my parents, but I think I would probably think before I voted and not vote for a party because they're part of the party. I mean, I probably would vote Green next.
Your natural instincts are slightly left, but you'd be persuaded or...
I think I'd vote for the Green Party because their foreign policies are quite thin, which I think any good country's foreign policy should be. I mean, Sweden seems to do quite well. I'm all about Sweden right now. I was just there today. I think Sweden's got it. I think Sweden's the new burnt orange. I think they're the future. And they don't worry about anyone else. They don't have race problems because they don't have race. And they certainly don't worry about anybody except themselves. Say what you will about that. But I kind of enjoyed it while I was there. And I think, you know, I like Tony Blair because he can defend himself verbally. But he's done. He's like a nasty piece of work publicly. And I'm really, really tired of looking at his wife's face.
That's not really a reason to vote against him, or is it?
I need a pretty one in the office. I feel as though the British, though, in their last voting cycle, funny to me, because I think it's typically English especially, where the British just don't know how to enjoy themselves. And the poppies were too high. They had to cut off the heads. Because it's the second largest economy in Europe. British have the highest standard of living in Europe. You're only second in exports next to Germany, who are completely screwed economically. You have no natural resources, except for a little bit of oil in northern Scotland. And yet you're respected politically throughout the world. Everyone wants to live here. But that's not enough for some reason. You had to show the Labour Party a lesson. For what? They're doing a really good job. You want to pimp slap somebody. You're happy. Who's to blame? It must be my local authority.
Yeah, I find it very bizarre.
It's just so odd to me. Yeah. Thank God for the Scottish, because they stuck by their guns and voted in most of them. Because they know they're doing really well. They want to do better. Even though they ship all their money down to London, they're not bitter about it. Well, maybe they are, but they don't show in their votes. What is up with Birmingham?
Well, what's always been up with Birmingham?
Well, but they voted Tory, didn't they? And I used to live in Birmingham. I'm telling you, in the mid-80s, Birmingham was a complete shithole. At least now you can only call it a shithole, not a complete one. They've got a Harvey Nicks. What more do they want? They don't eat with their feet anymore. I mean, it was a dump. They blamed the Germans. Wasn't the Germans' fault?
No. Not the way they spoke. No, they speak.
Oh, well, the Brummies pulled down that lovely Edwardian town center in the 1960s. The Germans didn't bomb that part. The Germans left that. So.
So who are the British comedians that you sort of... This is not... if you weren't you, whose material would you most like to be doing?
Well, Stuart Lee is.
Stuart Lee.
I think a genius. And what I like about Stuart Lee is not just his humility, which I like about Stuart Lee, but it's also he respects the writing and he respects the audience enough to do what he's going to do. And he doesn't take a detour. He's never patronizing. And I think that he is... Well, he's my icon. He's unknowingly my mentor because he takes the audience on a journey, doesn't he? He's a fetishist. I mean, he he's obsessed with things and he won't let go. Which I like. I like Goofy Graffo because I've never seen him fail. I've never seen him not do brilliantly well. Even doing other people's material, like in Kings of Comedy, where he had to do Jenny Godley's act, and he did better than she'll ever do with it. I mean, she said that. She said, you've done better with my act than I've ever done with it. He's a great salesman. He can really work a room.
And what about amongst the Americans, both living and dead?
I want to say women-wise, I think Kitty Flanagan's very, very good.
Yeah.
She's a selfish performer and works in her favor. In America, I mean, there's loads. I don't know if you know them. I mean, I stick by TV women from the 70s. I think Mary Tyler Moore was one of the best female comics we've ever produced. Carol Burnett. I think Julie Andrews is a great female comic. I think that her comedy skills are really underrated. I think, obviously, female comic, although she's been criticized as being transsexual many times within the gay community. In America, I think George Carlin's great. I wish he was less smug, though. I think... Oh, God. There's so many. I think people like Dana Gould, people you would know... Dana Gould, you might know now, is an executive producer on The Simpsons, but he still does stand-up. And his stand-up sounds a bit like The Simpsons. It did before he became Simpsons producer. He's very, very, very funny and very dark. And these are all comics, I think, that their act reflects something about themselves, that they are able to expose something about themselves, they're able to be vulnerable on stage about themselves, which is what I admire, because I want to leave the comedy club or the theater feeling as though I've learned something. I think Sandra Bernhardt is a genius. I've worked with her, fortunately, here in this country and in America. She attracts such a very smart audience, every comic stream, gay, straight, mixed, vaguely liberal, but willing to listen and willing to argue and willing to applaud and clap when they know they're meant to. Sandra's great. And Sandra rips herself open on stage and throws herself, thrashes herself, you know. And she knows a good joke when she sees it.
Mm.
And she knows when to restrict her audience and tell them to shut up when they need to, when they listen to her.
Mm.
And she's, of course, really politically savvy and really, really smart. Very posh.
Is she? Definitely posh.